You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleese Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 163 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Catwoman number 14, Detective Comics 1009, Justice League Odyssey number 12, Event Leviathan number 3, and Batman Hush, the animated movie. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC Comics 100 Page Giants will no longer be exclusive to Walmart or to Target. They will be published with Walmart and Target exclusive covers a couple of weeks before the comic stores will be able to sell them. The amount of original content in each title will increase from 24 to 36 pages an issue, and the number of titles will increase to around 20 titles a month. The current run of titles are coming to the end this month and will be relaunching soon.
I am curious how this is going to go. You know, I don't know if this is going to be something that continues long term or not.
I wondered that myself. It feels like to me they're trying to beef them up, trying to sell them more like graphic novels when they're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes sense to have them in more places than Walmart. Like, but that type of store though, like the grocery store, you know, bigger kind of store, I think is the right spot for those. Like, I don't know that those would sell as, I mean, they probably would sell at a comic book store, obviously, because that's the target audience, but that kind of book I think appeals more to somebody that maybe isn't as into comics. Because, like, for me personally, as although they're cool, I would rather buy like the specific Superman one instead of the giant one that only has a couple comics that I actually want to read.
Exactly. And these kind of 100-page giants, I would have loved them as a kid. But, you know, as an adult, I'm more interested in, you know, the more exclusive stories, titles, and such. So,
yeah, no, I agree with you completely. I think they're perfectly targeted towards kids and also people that maybe have a passing interest in comics and just kind of want to check something out, or, you know, like some sort of easy gift for somebody. Like that sort of, like, a Walmart-type location is the ideal place to sell these. I'm curious if this is sort of a second strategy, and if it doesn't work, it goes away, or if it is working, and we want to see if it will work even more at other places.
That's interesting. What's also interesting, I think, is are we going to see these digitally also? Or is this going to be exclusively print?
I can't imagine it would be digital, because what would be the point? Most of them are reprints, which you could already get digitally.
That is very true. You know, except, I mean, for like the original story part, but
which I could see on their own popping up digitally, but I can't imagine they would do the giant. I think that would be silly. I think that would sell poorly, to be honest with you.
You're probably right about that. All right, for more information on specific titles that they're going to be getting rid of and adding and stuff, check out the Earth Station DCU Facebook group for the article. Up next for DC News, Wonder Woman writer G. Willow Wilson has announced she will be exiting the title by the end of the year, framing it as her own decision. Wilson said she is exiting the title to work on a bucket list dream project. Since she's been getting questions, she says, "Yes, I will be leaving Wonder Woman in a couple of months to make room in my schedule for the bucket list dream project that I keep hinting at. The wonderful Steve Orlando will be coming on board, and his first storyline will knock your socks off. More soon." And then she says, "It's a great time to be a Wonder Woman fan." So Wilson's last solicited issue is October's Wonder Woman number 81. Orlando starts writing November's 82 and 83. And of course, we've seen Orlando cover a couple issues before, Wonder Woman number 51 through 55 and number 73, where he guest wrote.
I did like the most recent one that he did, where it was sort of like the history of that alternate world.
Yes.
That Hippolyta created. That was pretty cool. I did enjoy that. So I do like the passing of the torch. I am bummed, though, because I do think Wilson wrote a pretty good run. I will say one nice thing is that it does feel like we got a complete arc, at least. Clearly, she's going to be writing for a couple more issues, which is nice, but it doesn't feel like it got cut halfway through.
Yeah, I'm glad of that, too. Because it feels like we're getting to the end of the story arc she's been working on for a while.
I mean, there's clearly something more there, because this is almost like the end of Act 1, so to speak. Like, she gets back to her mom, and she's back with the Amazons, which is great. But we never totally learned exactly what happened. And I'm assuming that would have been the next step, and maybe she'll start getting into that. But we at least got what felt like something of a story, a nice sort of bookend.
Yeah, and maybe Orlando's going to be picking it up where she left off, so that would be great if he did.
I assume that he would, because his stories have already, you know, had something to do with what she's been writing about.
What I've liked about what she's done with Wonder Woman is, in her run, she's referenced stuff back since the title relaunched with Rebirth. So it's not like she went away from that stuff, and I'm hoping Orlando doesn't either. They just kind of keep with that going through. Because I don't want another relaunch, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, I agree completely with you. Like I said, I mean, I agree with you. The way that she kept what Rucka did, but then still did her own thing while not ignoring that stuff, was really nice. And I agree. Some of the stuff that she set up with her run would be a shame if Orlando just got rid of it all.
Right. And even with Grail popping up, the last issue we talked about, she even kept the stuff from when the title wasn't as good.
I know, yeah. That's true. I am bummed that she's gone, because that was a really great get for DC, getting her on Wonder Woman. So I don't know if I don't know if anybody knows who her project is for. I hope she does another DC book at some point, though, because she's a great writer. Like I've mentioned this before, but she's the one that created the Kamala Khan Miss Marvel character, and then obviously now she's been over on Wonder Woman as well. So I mean, she's done some really great stuff with female superheroes. So I would love for DC to get her back at some point on another one of their characters.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. All right, up next for DC News, Joker lands an R rating for violence, sexual content, and disturbing behavior. And my only comment to this is, duh?
Yeah, I'd have been pretty surprised if this was PG-13, just based on, because it's clearly not meant to be like a summer blockbuster flick. Like, it's never been advertised that way.
It looks pretty dark from the trailer.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the thing. Like, when you know that it's not trying to lower its rating to, you know, be the popcorn flick, then why wouldn't it be R-rated?
All right, and moving on to our last bit of news, and the most surprising to me, Brandon Routh, who plays Ray Palmer Adam, and Courtney Ford, who plays Nora Dark on Legends of Tomorrow, they're departing as season regulars. Routh and Ford's exit stem from a creative decision to wrap up their storyline. Because of the nature of the time-traveling Legends of Tomorrow, there has been a natural character turnover, with series regulars leaving as their stories come to an end and new characters coming on board. Of the large regular ensemble cast that started in Season 1, Only a couple will still be on the show by the end of this coming season. But as is the case with most legends, the producers are leaving the door open for Ray and Nora to pop back in for guest appearances.
I agree. I'm really surprised that they're... Like, I'm not shocked that Nora's character would go away.
Yeah, I'm not shocked by that one either.
Just because she's not been as nearly as established. I am surprised that Ray's going away, especially when Brandon Routh made it very clear that it was not something that he necessarily wanted.
Right. And his character... The thing I like about his character on the show, he's the do-gooder. He's the one that... morally steers everybody when they get off track.
I have to admit, I feel it never really felt like we fully got the Atom all the time. Like, I know part of that is special effects, but it felt like it's kind of like the same with Firestorm, where we sort of got close with him sometimes, but overall we only got like a watered down version of the character, and then they wrote him off before we ever really, you know, fully got into it. It kind of feels the same way with Ray. Like, I know he's been around on the show the whole time, and he was on Arrow before that, but it never felt like we fully got there.
I know what you mean. It's like he was there, but he never embraced his role as the Atom. I mean, we never really saw him shrinking that much or doing... He'd done some scientist stuff, but not as much as he probably should have been.
Well, and especially in his latter, like the last season, two seasons or so, he's been the Atom less and less, which is just part of the nature of the show, which again is fine. Like, I've loved his character on the show a lot, but yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a bummer. Also, I swear at one point they said they were going to be, like on the show, they said they were going to be tweaking some stuff on his costume, and they never did. He had that same clunky costume the whole time.
Yeah, he sure did. So, I don't know. I'm guessing they're wanting to make room for newer characters.
But, like, you know, they say that there's roster turnover. There really hasn't... They haven't introduced that many new characters, I feel like. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like, obviously, the original roster is almost entirely gone. But they've added, on average, like, one, maybe two tops a season. Like, we got John, and then we got we got Zari, we got the original Vixen, and then we got not Vixen, but Vixen, the British. But you know, but like, I don't know, but like, that even that one was weird. Like, technically that's two separate characters, but, and I know that they are different characters, but it's still the same actress, so it doesn't totally feel that different. And then I'm assuming that my favorite werewolf is now a member of the team.
Your favorite werewolf. I love it.
Which is fine, I guess. But like, I feel like we're getting to a point where the team is going to... The team is starting to feel a little watered down, if I'm being completely honest.
I have to agree with you there.
Like, the team seems like it's... It almost feels like it's almost like accidentally part of the DC universe. Like, we're writing off most of the characters that have anything to do remotely with the DC universe, and just sort of like, and then we've got Gary and this werewolf girl.
You know, it's almost like the team is starting to slide into a Justice League Dark type of team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I almost think there is something to that, because they are keeping with Magic. Originally, it seemed like they were going to be... Once the show kind of went like, we're going to be funny now, it looked like they were going to kind of jump from theme to theme, which I was totally cool with, but it kind of seems like they've kind of stuck on Magic. Like, they kind of hit that, and they're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. I don't know if maybe they're trying to, like, fill the supernatural void that's going to be closing or what. I don't know.
That could be. You know, I'd love it if Zatanna came on.
I agree, but I got to question whether she would. Just based on what the show's doing, it seems like they're more interested in just starting to introduce their own original characters, which, again, is fine, I guess, but it feels less and less like a DC show.
That's true. All right, well, that wraps up DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
and we host the Watchathon Arassalon,
a journey through all of Doctor Who, one serial at a time.
Listen in, and you will learn about
true facts.
Tune in and hear our
final thoughts.
Find out how little we actually know about science, history,
Doctor Who,
and pretty much anything else.
The Watchathon of Rassilon,
a proud member of the ESO Network.
Available wherever you get your podcast fix.
Keep calm and Rassilon.
Goodbye, and I love you.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Catwoman number 14. Another great issue of Catwoman. And the thing about this one was it wasn't written by Joel Jones. It was written by Ram B. I didn't even recognize that name.
I just saw V on the cover page for the writer, and I was like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't either. That must be how they sign their stuff.
I thought this was what I liked was that this was clearly the writer clearly has been reading King's Batman run. Clearly.
Oh yes. Clearly. I was gonna bring that up at the end, but since you brought it up now, that's one of the things I really liked about this issue is we see Selina talking. Basically, she's talking to herself part of the time, but she's also talking with her cats. Like, she's having her part of the conversation and Bruce's conversation if he was there. I really loved how they fed that through the whole issue.
Yeah, I agree. And I liked this story. My two minor, and again, minor gripes for this are it's yet another diversion from the main story. I feel like I have such a hard time keeping track of what's going on because we so rarely get the actual like main story for this book. And then it's also yet another flash forward. Like, you're probably, yep, that's me. You're probably wondering how I got here.
you know what? That was the first thing I was going to bring up. I was like, seriously, do we have to start here? We could have just started with Catwoman meeting that woman. No, we have to show her drowning and bleeding first, and then do a flashback. I was like,
yeah, we just didn't need it. We didn't need it. Like, and I don't buy into the. I'm sure it's such a popular technique because I think the idea is it's create stakes for the story, but it doesn't really. Like, Catwoman's not dying in that book. She's not, and so like I don't. When I read that, I wasn't like, oh my gosh, is she going to survive? It was like, cool, again. Can we just get to the story where I find her like this? Like, it wasn't her in danger isn't, like, unexpected. Like, that's not an unexpected scenario to find her in.
Yes, you expect her to get into those. The thing you want to know is, how does she get out of it?
Yeah.
Because you know she's going to get out of it.
Obviously, I want to know how that happened, but, like, just tell me. Like, I don't need to know that that's happening first. The way I think that that sort of scenario works using that framing device is when it's a situation that you really don't expect. Like, you're like, wait, what? What the hell's going on? Like, that is when it works. But most of the time, especially in this Catwoman book, it's been, like, completely normal Catwoman situations. And you're like, okay, I mean, I'm interested, obviously, but like, you could have just told the story. Like, I'm not any more interested because of this.
Exactly. Now, I think the surprising thing is who pulls her out of the water. I was not expecting the gentleman ghost to be in this issue. But I have to agree with you. This seems to be deviating from the other story where they seem to be introducing with the map. I'm like, where's the map? So
it seemed to be sort of a side story. I'm assuming that the person who put the bounty on her head is the same villain that we've been following the whole time.
Oh, but yeah.
It's kind of left unsaid. But again, like, either way, it's still a sort of side road. It's definitely not continuing that main story, that map, like you said. And then, it was really cool getting the Gentleman Ghost. It almost seemed like he wanted more of those type of criminals in the comic, but then, like, it was only Gentleman Ghost and whatever that other guy was.
Yeah, we've seen him before recently, but I couldn't remember his name or anything. And of course they didn't tell us.
It almost felt like he wanted sort of like a, it's not a great comparison, but I can almost think of that movie Smoking Aces, which was like all of these different bounty hunters or contracted killers trying to kill the same guy, and you're all kind of following the different stories. It almost seemed like he kind of wanted to do that kind of story with Catwoman running into all of these different guys, but I mean, we didn't totally get that. Like, we got like the really, really pared down version of that.
Yes. But I mean, this story was very interesting. And I'm interested in seeing where it goes. I'm still interested in the map story too. So it being weird that Joel Jones didn't write this, I'm wondering what's going on.
Hey, I don't know if she's got to be working on some other comic, right?
Yeah.
Like, are they maybe working on, I'm just guessing, maybe it's the Supergirl book? Like, are they doing a sequel to that? Maybe?
I don't know. That would be cool.
Because she's obviously still doing the covers, and they're still some of the best parts of the comic because her art is so good. But that can't possibly, doing Catwoman covers can't possibly be taking up that much time. Like, not that that's easy or quick, but like, that can't be all she's doing. There's got to be some other project that she's working on.
Hopefully they'll announce it soon. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Detective Comics 1009. All right, first thing I have to say about Detective Comics is that I'm glad to see that Ace the Bat Hound is back. Now, Ace, I know he's been around for a long time. I remember them bringing him back during the 90s. They brought Ace back, and they also had another character named Harold, which would be cool if they brought him back too. Harold was this mute humpback character that was, back in the 90s, he was the one that did all Batman's tech stuff. So it was cool having that character, but that character, they just kind of went away after a while. So, after ignoring Alfred's recommendations he should call it an early night, I found the coming home scene hilarious. So Bruce goes to bed at 6:05 a.m. and then gets woke up at 6:07 a.m. by Alfred. And their banter back and forth, it was freaking great.
I agree. It was pretty good.
Now, one thing I was disappointed in, and this has been something comics have done for a long time, we had Mr. Freeze on the cover. All right, we're getting a Mr. Freeze story. No, the main villain's Deadshot.
Yeah, the Freeze story clearly has nothing whatsoever to do with the story that we're seeing.
Yep. Are we going into rant time?
No. I'm just, you're right. It was weird because we do get, in their defense, we do get Mr. Freeze, but it's clearly still setting up its own other story. I guess I could be wrong. I would be really surprised that these two stories cross over, though. I really think this one's going to be resolved first.
Right. So, I was surprised by Deadshot showing up. I was like, okay. So, we see Deadshot get hired, and of course, the guy who brings him his mission, he shoots him. No surprise there. We see him go after the... Oh, this is the other thing I want to talk about. I couldn't remember. Did you mention something last week about environmentalists taking different private planes? Did we talk about that on the show? Did we talk about it off the show? Was it with somebody totally different?
I don't remember.
Okay. I was having a conversation with somebody, and they talked about how, you know, this is like a real world thing, how environmentalists all take their private jets to their meeting or whatever. And I found it funny that in this, Bruce has all his people go on one plane to their destination. And you don't remember, so apparently maybe it wasn't with you. It's somebody else I had a conversation with.
So, I mean, I agree with that point, but yeah.
So, if any listeners out there I was talking to can remember that, shoot me a message. Anyways, one thing I was not clear on, and I don't think the store is clear on this either, who was Deadshot's target? Because it seems like we were just about to find out who the target was, and the lightning struck the plane. It felt like it was Lucius Fox, but I wasn't sure. It could have been Bruce, too. It was unclear, and I wanted to see what your thoughts on it was.
First off, what was Deadshot's plan? Like, he intentionally drives the plane into the storm, but then does not seem to be prepared for it to actually be hit by lightning. And so I was like, wait, what? Like, why not just... If you want to do that, why wouldn't he just drive it into the storm and then, like, drop out of the plane? The lightning does the work for him.
I don't know what his plan was, because it was very unclear.
It seemed very at odds with itself. Like, it was like, no, I want the plane to be put into danger, but then I also want to go shoot somebody and not be put in danger myself. And it was like, I don't know how to tell you this, dude, but these two sides of the plane do not work together. My guess is maybe it's the other board members of Wayne Tech, is my guess, because they were all clearly not on board with these new policies. And so the only thing I can think of maybe is that they're trying to eliminate them so that they don't have to do that. But I don't think I'm right. I think I'm wrong on that, so I don't know.
I don't know. To me, it felt like he might have been targeting Lucius, but I wasn't sure. I guess we'll find out more next. Does this feel like a two-part arc to you?
Definitely. I especially think that because this Mr. Freeze story is getting ready to go. I'm very confused at the manner in which they're trying to tell this. Like, it's like we've gotten two teasers in a row.
Yeah, they're making it seem like it's a big story. I mean, we see Mr. Freeze bringing his wife out of hibernation at the end. And I'm guessing that Lex is giving him the cure. And I'm interested to see what his deal is with Lex Luthor, because we haven't found out yet. We're seeing Mr. Freeze's... Lex Luthor is making good on his promise, but what does Freeze have to do in return? That's what I'm curious about. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Justice League Odyssey number 12. Cletus, we called it. Darkseid is back at full power. And we saw Cyborg, Azrael, and Starfire be transformed into new gods. And apparently under Darkseid's control. And I was happy that Darkseid transformed back into his classic Kirby look. Yay!
I mean, we did call it, but also I feel like anybody reading this who has ever read a DC comic would have called the outcome of this story. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I certainly don't feel clever. It feels like, okay, we knew this is what was going to happen.
Okay, just rain on the parade, will you?
Well, no, it's not on. I'm saying it's more a criticism of the comic. It was like, I just don't understand. I never could buy into the heroes thinking that this was a good idea. I could never buy into that because this was obviously what was going to happen.
Yeah, they were obviously setting this up, and we talked about that last time. So you're right. You could tell this is where the story was going. It didn't take geniuses to figure it out.
Well, but the frustrating thing is that the characters themselves should have also known that that's where it was going. Like, the writer never convinced me that these characters would be fooled by this. Like, I was like, no, they have to be, like, willfully stupid to think that Darkseid's not going to do what Darkseid always does.
The thing was, they talked about it like he was going to do, but they never did anything to stop it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They just kept going along with it. They're like, well, he's probably up to something, but let's keep going anyway, instead of, I don't know, doing literally anything else.
And poor Jessica Cruz. She attempts to stand alone and she's obliterated by his Omega Beams. I'm like, ugh. I mean, we know she's not we know she's not dead, because next issue is called Afterlife, and I'm guessing we're going to be following what happened to Jessica. Man, that was terrible to see.
Yeah. Yeah, not my favorite scene.
No. I really like Jessica as Green Lantern, just because she's so different from other Green Lanterns we've seen before. I like how this issue showed, you know, even Darkseid was talking about how she's overcame her fear, even though you wouldn't think Darkseid would know something like that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it was a great sort of heroic stand for her, but, like, again, entirely avoidable in just every way. Like, this didn't have to happen.
Exactly. It's funny that we got to this point in issue number 12. I thought it was funny. I found it ironic. And you could almost end the title right here and move the story on to whatever grand plan they have for it.
That was the thing. I did feel like increasingly this book felt like it was almost a mini series being sold as an ongoing that was meant to be setting up some event.
Yeah.
But I almost wonder if they haven't gotten to where they were supposed to be yet. And so now the book is sort of like, has to keep going almost. I don't know.
Well, it felt like they stretched it out to get to this point.
I know. And that's why I'm this book feels too big for it to be its own self-contained story. Like, Darkseid getting his full power back and then having these souped-up versions of Starfire, Cyborg, and Azrael, and then having that only ever take place in that book is odd. So I feel like it is supposed to cross over with something else, but when is that? And then what do they do with the book in the meantime? Which is sort of where we've been all along with this book to begin with.
Yeah. So I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens next issue, because that'll be the real telling of where the story is going. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week, Event Leviathan number 3. This issue opens up with our detectives at the Fortress of Solitude. And then we see kind of flashback as they're questioning Jason Todd, who we both already guessed isn't Leviathan. We see them questioning him and trying to figure out if he really is Leviathan.
One of my favorite lines in this is Plastic Man being called not Elongated Man.
Oh, I know. That was so freaking hilarious.
Which is great. And does make the question also, so where is Elongated Man? But anyway, I really liked that encounter between the team and Red Hood. I thought the fights it scene itself was really cool, the way he kind of slowly dealt with the team, almost partly, like, definitely with skill, but also a little bit, I don't know if luck, but, like, it didn't feel like the team was going completely all out to get him.
Yeah, it did feel like he was even outsmarting Batman a little bit. At least that's the impression I got. I'm like, I don't know about that, but...
I correct me if I'm wrong, I wonder if you got this impression. It felt like the team was questioning if Batman was holding back, like, almost like he wanted him to get away. They were talking, because they seemed to be implying that Bruce was not quite as helpful as he could have been, which, having then within reading the fight after that, was like, yeah, I think that's true.
Yeah, I see what you're saying about that. And honestly, he probably didn't believe it was him.
Or at least didn't want to believe.
Yeah. It's still unclear if it was him or not, but it gave you the impression it wasn't him.
I'm pretty sure it's not him. It would be weird for that whole interaction to then be like, oh yeah, no, it really was him.
Yeah, it would. The other thing I thought was strange in this is when we got to the Amanda Waller part, was Superman showing up when Leviathan confronts her with his warriors behind him.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was not expecting Superman to pop up in the story, at least not yet. I thought that was going to be like towards maybe the end of the story, because they made a whole point about him being off-world.
Yeah. In
which, I mean, it is Superman, so that's not that big of a deal. But, yeah, I agree. I thought maybe the detective team would show up, but not Superman. That was legit. I was legitimately a little bit surprised by that.
You know, the other thing I thought was it seemed kind of strange is Damian seems to be just hanging out with them. You know what I mean? It just felt like something that Bruce wouldn't have brought Damian along for, but I'm happy that he's here, and he's brought some interesting concepts to the detective team.
I don't think he was meant to be on the team. It felt like he came to Bruce with, like, hey, I think it might be Jason. And so then he's with them, and then now that everything's going on, he's just, like, sticking around. Like, at that point, it wouldn't make sense to send him away.
Yeah. And I'm kind of glad he's there, because he can bring some comedy to things.
Yes, I agree.
So, well, of course, we also have Plastic Man, who is he's always great to have in a comic.
Yeah.
Very interested in seeing where this goes next. So, very, very interesting story.
I agree. I've very much enjoyed the first three issues so far. Like I said at the beginning of this, though, I really hope the payoff is good, because if the reveal is bad, like, it really brings, it's going to bring the whole, because the whole comic is so predicated around who Leviathan is.
Do you believe it's a superhero?
I do. I really do. And I will say, one of the other, especially this comic in particular, one of the themes I found really interesting in this is that Jason Todd emphasizes, like, oftentimes it's not really the who, it's the why. And so, obviously, the comic would argue that whoever it ends up being is less important than their reasons for doing it, but it's still, like, it's got to be a good reveal.
Yeah, it's got to
be.
Who,
like, unfortunately, in the nature of comics, like, the who does matter for this story. Although I would agree that their reasons for doing it, especially if it's somebody that you're like, wait, why would they do this? Like, obviously the why becomes just as important.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Batman Hush.
The answer. The ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything is 42.
That's right, Broad Speculation, and on the 42cast, we bring you drama-free discussions on television shows, movies, video games, novels, and comics. So don't bother thinking about the question, just go straight to the answer. It's only on the 42cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
And we're back! Let's talk Batman Hush, the animated movie. And joining us tonight to talk about the movie is Angela Pritchett. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're excited we could get somebody to come and talk about Batman Hush, because everybody was busy. Everybody's going to Dragon Con, like it's next weekend or something.
I know, I'm so sad I can't go this year.
So I was wondering if you were going or not, because I was like, oh, she's available for the show. I wonder if she's going. And I also listened to I listened to Earth Station 1 tonight while I was working at the bookstore. It was their episode, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid movie review. And when they were doing, when they were talking con stuff, he announced he announced that he thought you were going to the show. So
I told him I wasn't going, because I was like, I can't afford it this year. It was really expensive last year, and it's just one of those things where I was like, I'll take a year off and then go back.
I bet he just forgot.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I've been going, like, for a year. Like, it's, like, 15 years or something. And I really haven't missed any of them. And I normally always do the Earth Station 1 show at Dragon Con. Like, that's one of the few things that if I miss anything, I don't miss that. So,
I have never been to Dragon Con yet. So, I want to at some point. I don't know when, though.
You should totally go. Like, so many Earth Station 1 podcasters go to it, so it's really cool just to get to meet everyone, too.
Yeah, that would be fun to meet everybody, because a lot of people I just know online. I've never actually met. Now, I did get to meet Ashley Pauls a few weeks ago, because she was out here for Gen Con. So we got together at this game store Cletus told us about, and we played some games and talked. It was fun.
Very cool. And Gen Con's fun, too. So,
yeah. I didn't go to Gen Con this year, which is odd. Indiana Comic Con's coming up this weekend. I'm going to that. So, they were so close together this year that I had to pick one over the other. The other thing that I thought was funny is we're getting John Barrowman coming here to Indiana instead of going to Dragon Con. I thought that was weird too.
Yeah.
All right, we got off topic there. Let's get into the show. First thing I want to ask you guys, well, I already know the answer for Cletus, but I want to ask you, Angela, have you read Batman Hush, the graphic novel?
I read the issues as they were coming out, because when Batman Hush came out, I was working at the comic shop in North Carolina that I had my first job at. And so I remember, for the most part, like, I actually had to go look a couple things up online, because after I watched the animated version, I was like, wait a minute, that's not how I remember it.
That's exactly how I felt when I started watching it. When it came on, Bane came on the screen, I was like, wait a minute, Bane wasn't in this. And I ran and grabbed my tablet, and I started downloading. I'm like, come on, come on, come on. So it's downloading while I'm trying to watch the movie. And of course, it was Killer Croc. And I was very disappointed in the movie for switching it to Bane, because they didn't even do the good version of Bane. They did the brute version, which I hate that version of Bane.
Yeah, they tried to kind of hand wave that by saying that he was being clearly affected by the new Venom formula that he had. But I thought that was a lame excuse. I was like, well, if you need to justify why you've got dumb Bane, then maybe just use Killer Croc like it is in the comic.
And the Hush version of Killer Croc was the super creepy version of Killer Croc, so it would have done so awesome animated.
It would have. I was disappointed by that. That rubbed me the wrong way right away. I'm not going to lie about it.
What I thought was interesting was, aside from the Bane change, the first half-ish of the movie is pretty similar. It's hitting a lot of the same beats as the comic was, and then all of a sudden it makes a sharp left turn. And some of it, I think, was just because it's set in, you know, the kind of post-New 52 world that the animated universe is set in. And so certain things had to change. Like, the grave that they go to is different because the person that's in the grave in the comic is already alive in the animated world, so you can't have that twist. So yeah, I thought it was interesting how close they followed it for a while, and then how not close it was after that.
I was just sad there was no Huntress in that scene.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. Is Batgirl even in the graphic novel?
It certainly would not have been Barbara, because Barbara would have still been Oracle at that point.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She was Oracle at that point. That's probably why they had Huntress in the original version.
I was just sad there was no Huntress. I was expecting her to show up during the graveyard scene.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool. Although, I do get why they trimmed the cast down a little bit. In some ways, I think that worked, and then in other ways, I felt like it hurt the story a little bit. And we can get into more of that as we go through the movie.
I thought it was kind of odd that they even brought Damian Wayne into the story at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it was a funny scene. I did like that scene, but it didn't really serve any any purpose in terms of the story.
Other than some jokes, like, it's just like, yeah, his scene with Bruce, and then Nightwing bringing up Damian with Catwoman there, and it was just kind of like, ooh, you guys got some stuff to talk about.
that was a funny moment.
But it does make sense. I do get why Damian is present a little bit in it, because this is taking place within their animated continuity. Like, he kind of has to pop up, or like, he has to be mentioned a little bit. So I get it, but like you guys are saying, he didn't really do a whole lot with him.
No, and if I remember in the graphic novel, Tim Drake was Robin at the time. I think it was pre-Damian, if I remember right.
It was Tim Drake as Robin.
Right, who's my favorite Robin, by the way. Anybody that's listened to the show knows that. But I remember in the graphic novel, Tim being against Bruce dating Selina. And I remember them two butting heads in the graphic novel. So I think that was kind of a missed opportunity in the movie version.
Well, one thing I think we should get into to a certain extent, because of the short runtime with this, they did have to cut some things out. And so, like, I agree that you do lose something where in the, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm remembering this wrong, I think Nightwing is still in favor of it in the comic, right? That seems familiar to me.
I think you're right, but it's been a bit.
I will admit I could be wrong about that, but either way, it would be nice, ideally, to have opposing opinions on that, but that then requires screen time. And when you've only got an hour and 20 minutes, like, you've got to cut stuff, and I'm okay with that being cut. You know what I mean? Like, as nice as that would be, you've got to make the movie longer if you're going to include that subplot.
One problem I had with jumping to the Poison Ivy Catwoman scene, she kisses Catwoman, but her poison doesn't affect her?
She did make the comment that she stole the bag and stuff from her because she was under her control. So I can only guess that after that happened, she took the anti-venom stuff so it didn't bother her.
Oh, that could be. Maybe I just missed that.
They didn't actually mention that, but after having watched the Batman animated series as a kid so many times and Batman having his anti-venom every time he dealt with Poison Ivy, I could only imagine that.
The implication with this seemed to be that the kiss wasn't toxic, but was what she was using for mind control in this. So when she kisses Catwoman, it's not to kill her, it's to, like, reassert control.
Oh, okay. I thought the scenes with her controlling Superman followed the graphic novel fairly well, from what I remembered.
I mean, it's almost scene for scene. Like, there are some of the shots are almost straight out of the comic.
That's what I thought I remembered. I thought it followed it pretty closely. And the other thing I remembered was Bruce dating Lois, they were going out on a date or going out together, and Clark being jealous of that. I think they went a little more in depth with it in the graphic novel, probably because they had the time to do it.
I would have liked if they had done a little tiny bit more with that, even with what they did, because I have to say, and I kind of, again, talking about how they had to shorten some of the story, there were times where it felt like they were including scenes because they were in the comic, but didn't necessarily help the story they were trying to tell with the movie. You know what I mean? Like, when he pops up in the Daily Planet, like, it makes sense because you've got to introduce that they're in Metropolis and that Superman's going to factor into the story. But the scene with Lois makes more sense in the comic because they do more with it. In the movie, it's just there because it was in the comic.
I see what you're saying about that. Yeah, it did feel like that.
So I feel like we have to talk because we're going to keep dancing around this. Full spoilers on this if you haven't seen it yet.
Hold on, before you go into that, Cletus, that's, you just reminded me what I was gonna say when we went into that long pause. I talked Clista into watching this, and Jordan ended up, my 13-year-old, ended up watching it too. He's never read Batman Hush, and of course he hadn't seen the movie before. We're only a few minutes into it after they introduced Tommy. One of the first things he tells me is, "Dad, Tommy's Hush." So he guesses it right away. I'm I'm watching this thing fully expecting this reveal by the time I get to the end of the movie, and was so disappointed that it was different. Go ahead.
So what do you guys think of this, of the change of having it, the twist of it not being Thomas but instead being the Riddler?
I did not like it.
I didn't either. It was, I don't know, I kind of felt like it was a cop-out, just to kind of, because you were, like, as you were saying, if they added in everything, it would take so long, but just kind of having that, like, Riddler villain fight at the end made it so all audiences would completely understand what's going on.
Plus, what was the point of having Tommy in the story?
Oh, I guess it was just to have that emotional attachment for Bruce Wayne, who the entire time was like, I'm going to be a better friend.
And then never was.
Yeah.
But they never
then,
did
then
it.
Then his friend died.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. I get their instinct to change the villain because most people, because otherwise you know the story. Like, most people watching this know that Thomas is Hush, and so you lose some of the, like, mystery, because you all know, like, you know who it's going to be. But at the same time, I think this was the problem with following the comic so closely in the first half. It makes the second half not make sense, because there are things in it. So, for example, when Batman is injured in the first half of Hush, the comic, it's part of Thomas's bigger plan to reintegrate himself into Bruce's life. That doesn't make sense if it's the Riddler. Why wouldn't the Riddler just want him dead right there?
Exactly. The other problem I had with the Riddler is they kept going on about him being a C-list villain. But the Riddler's really not a C-list villain. He's always been an A-list villain for the most part. So that didn't make a lot of sense to me as a fan watching it.
I agree with you. And then the other thing on top of that is that the whole time you have Hush acting like Hush in the comic, right? A really serious-minded mastermind villain. And then as soon as it's revealed it's the Riddler, he's nuts again. Like, it's like an instant, like, I'm loony again. Switch goes off. And it feels at odds with what the movie was trying to do. I do not mind cursing at all. And so the fact that several of the characters curse in this movie don't bother me, but it does change your audience a little bit. It's like we're trying to make this movie a little more mature. But then the ending isn't. You know what I'm saying? If you want to do those things to your movie and make it kind of cut the younger part of your audience out, then the villain at the end shouldn't be this cartoonish bad guy. At the end, he's I thought he was absurd at the end. I thought he was completely ridiculous. And I was like, this works if it's like kind of an all-ages Batman story, but it's not. It's clearly not meant to be. So if you want to do that, then I feel like you've got to go a different direction with the Riddler. It really felt like the movie was kind of fighting with itself almost, where it was like, well, we want to make this a more serious and adult Batman, but then we're going to have the Joker be this just weird cartoonish version of himself at the end.
You mean Riddler?
Feels like it.
Sorry, yeah. Riddler. Yeah, sorry, Riddler.
Feels like they did some rewrites in the last part of it. They saw the original script and they just went and rewrote it.
You might not be wrong about that, because one of the other weird things that I thought was, so correct me if I'm wrong in this, if I'm remembering right, in the comic, the big red herring is that it's supposed to be Two-Face, right? Am I remembering that right?
I thought the big thing was them bringing Jason Todd back.
Well, no, I'm sorry, the red herring, like the one that they're trying to make you think it is before you find out it's Thomas.
Yeah, well, Two-Face was in Hush, so I'm trying to remember, because like I said, it's been years since I've read it.
Yeah, I haven't read it recently, which I probably should have, but I'm pretty sure the comic for quite a while is trying to convince you that it's Two-Face, that's why he's wearing the wrapping, is because he got like surgery on his face, and then eventually you realize it's actually Thomas.
That might have been.
They include some of those red herrings. When he first encounters Hush in the movie, he goes into that warehouse where they had a couple like one half and 50% things in the background. That felt like it was, again, trying to do that, the Two-Face red herring thing. And then they, like a scene after that where they're doing the Catwoman-Batman montage, they just casually defeat Two-Face. So I was like, wait, what was the point of that? I guess the thing in the background meant nothing. Clearly I was reading too much into it, but I thought they were trying to do the same thing that the comic did, and then they didn't. And it was like, I think you might be onto something with that, where it almost felt like maybe there were two different writing teams on this.
Or they read the script and they were like, this is too dark, guys. We need to change this.
Yeah, that was, in my opinion, that was a mistake, if that was the case.
I'd have to agree.
Yeah.
I really thought it was a joke, like, or another like mislead. When Riddler initially confesses, I was like, no.
Yeah,
it's not the Riddler. Why would they do, like, it sort of made sense with I thought they were going to go a different direction with the Lazarus Pit, because you can't use Jason Todd because he's already alive again in this universe. So I understood their dilemma with that. I thought, well, did maybe Thomas get a hold of a Lazarus Pit and that's how he's kind of dangling something over these other characters is the use of the pit. And then I realized that, again, I was reading way too much into it because they were just flat out telling you it was the Riddler. And I was like, well, that's dumb.
Well, I mean, it's not just that. They hint it to the League of Assassins and everything and then just left that whole part of the story out.
Yeah, I thought, wasn't Ra's al Ghul in the Hush storyline? That's what I thought.
And I think Talia was too, because I think at some point, like, she gets kidnapped or something in it. But I don't
remember that. Yeah. I mean, so it seemed a little odd. Again, it seemed like they wanted to include the Lazarus Pit from the comic, but then didn't know how to do it. And then they were like, well, what if Riddler went into it? It was almost like they like forced the storyline to meet certain things when they could have simply just cut that part out. Like, I feel like it would have been so much easier to just not have the Lazarus Pit subplot. And that would have been fine, because, again, the Jason Todd storyline has been resolved in another movie. So you don't need to reference that. It was so... I thought it was odd that they were really specific about adapting certain parts and then took these huge liberties with other parts of the comic.
Yeah, it was a disservice to the movie, I think.
That's the thing. Like, I think I could be okay with Hush being a different character, to be honest, because before watching the movie, one of the talking points that I was planning on bringing up in the podcast was that Batman Hush is really the only story that Hush has ever succeeded in as a character. Like, what? Like, he's been in other comics, but could you list them? I couldn't. I personally couldn't list another. I know he's been in other ones.
Yeah, because so, they've like, done some spinoffs and stuff, but I don't. They're not memorable.
And that's the thing. So I think this movie is a testament to how little Thomas himself has lasted as a character, because they felt comfortable changing his identity, because they're like, nobody really cares that it's him, so let's just switch it to Riddler, I guess. And so clearly that movie reinforced that. So again, so like, I'd be okay if they changed the identity, but it didn't seem, you got to write the movie towards that. And I personally didn't feel like they did. It felt like they were trying to adapt the comic, but then also like change the ending just to surprise you, not because it made sense for the movie itself.
All right. Any last comments before we wrap it up?
I mean, I still urge people to go watch it because it's still fun to watch, even with all of our... If you haven't watched it and you actually listen to all of our rants, then spoilers. Some people do that, so you never know.
That is true.
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it was well animated, very well voice acted. Again, I'm not necessarily upset that they deviated from the source, but in my opinion, the deviations they made didn't make the movie better. I am all for changing the changing your adaptation to tell a better story or tell a story better suited to the medium that you're using. And some of the things they introduced worked. Like, I liked the Damian scene; I thought it was really funny. But then the Riddler change for me didn't work because the movie didn't seem better because of it. It seemed worse because of it. It's certainly not the worst of the DC animated selection, but I wouldn't consider it in my like top five.
For me, I don't think I'll watch this again. I just didn't enjoy it that much. And it's maybe because I'm comparing it too much to the graphic novel, which I really love. But to me, this is not a movie I'd watch again. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Angela?
Not that I can think of. Listen to me every week on A Geek Girl's Take on Earth Station 1 podcast. Now that I have my voice back from being sick for 2 weeks, I can start recording episodes again. So, yeah, catch me there.
I heard you tonight, actually. You were talking about The Boys, which I had a coworker tell me about that show also. I'm more intrigued to check it out.
You should totally watch it. It's crazy good. It's violent, but it's really good. And it's a role you wouldn't expect Keith Urban to play, or Carl Urban. You wouldn't expect him to play on a show, so it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm excited about checking it out now. Have you checked out that show, Cletus?
I have not, but I've also gotten it highly recommended by several people, so
you guys
definitely want to watch it.
It is so well made.
All right, and what's your shout out this week, Cletus?
Since we've spoken so highly about the comic version of this story, definitely go if you've never read Batman Hush. It really is one of the best modern Batman stories. Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee. It's a great story.
That's
Jim
Lee art.
Yeah, I mean they use so much of the Batman Rogues Gallery throughout that comic, and then the main story itself is a really good one. It is a shame that Hush really never took off as a character from this. He really, in a lot of ways, he's sort of like Doomsday. Whereas while Doomsday has continued on, really the only true Doomsday story is the original one, and it's sort of the same thing with Hush, where that first story was so good, and then every time he's appeared after that has sort of been a sort of like eh. But the comic itself, go check out Batman Hush.
I should have guessed that you're going to shout out about Batman Hush. That was my shout out too. Yeah, I was going to shout out checking out Batman the Complete Hush. It is both on Comixology Unlimited if you have that, and it's also on the DC Universe app. So you can check it out on both. All right, coming up next week, we're going to be talking Aquaman, Batman, number 77, which I still haven't read yet, Cletus. So no spoilers. Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen, number 2. Black Mask, Year of the Villain, number 1. And, of course, Cletus and I talked about this a couple weeks ago, so I threw it on the schedule. Kingdom Come. I'm excited to talk about that. Have you ever read that, Angela?
I have. It's a long time ago. Like, a lot of the DC stuff I used to read just whenever we would get, like, as we would get them in at the comic shop, or just if we had trade paperbacks there, because if I didn't know what I was selling, how could I sell it? And, I mean, that's my big excuse, just to get to read comics every Wednesday and during the week.
Well, you're more than welcome to join us next Sunday night to talk Kingdom Come if you want.
Possibly. Let me check my schedule.
Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go. You sure this is necessary? The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.